This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Nicola Jenkins from RAP. How are you, Nicola?
I'm very well, thank you.
We're going to be talking a wee bit today about RAP and what you are, what you're trying to achieve. But do you want to just give us an overview first about yourself, actually? Yeah. I detect a South African accent.
Yes, I am South African and very proudly so, even though I live here. And I actually come from Cape Town, so I'd like to think I'm vaguely knowledgeable about wine.
Excellent.
Yeah.
What's RAP?
Wrap's interesting. It's not a sandwich, as some might think, but Wrap is actually the Waste and Resources Action Program. We've been around since about 2000, which is really interesting. And I've been with the company for 4 years, and it's really grown. There are about 200 of us. Its history was very much started in dealing with recycling and ensuring that there was a good economic basis for recycling in the country. And I suppose that gives us our name, which is the Waste and Resources Action Program. And we've had to update ourselves a bit, so we look at minimization as well as recycling. And our remit has really expanded. So I work in the retail team, and we work very much with the retail supply chain. And that's where very much a lot of our wine work is instigated, as well as in our manufacturing team. Some of you might be very familiar with our public-facing program called Recycle Now.
Nope.
So what happens to a bottle, and you might be drinking out of the same tin can you recycled 5 days ago, all those lovely TV adverts. Another area where RAP are becoming a lot more prolific is in food waste. Love food, hate waste. Some of you might have seen our campaigns on that. And some of the composting bins you probably would have had at home are all RAP-type initiatives. So a very big, wide spectrum of work. So that is very much where our focus is at the moment.
Okay. Would you class yourself as a government quango or a government department?
That's a very interesting question. We are actually funded by the devolved administration, so Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales, as well as DEFRA, and some other smaller organisations, so it is publicly funded money. However, we are an independent company, so we do have autonomy to a degree, particularly in the types of programs and the targets that we set. However, because we are funded by the government, we do need to ensure that all our money is well spent and that we actually publicly notify the general public about what we spend the money on, and hopefully it is a good spend.
Obviously, so if you're government funded, where do your directives come from? Is it, you know, Gordon Brown?
Yeah.
Or is it coming in from Europe? Where are the instructions about targets, etc., coming from? And what are those targets?
They really do vary, but I suppose the biggest player is the EU. In particular, one of the directives called the EU Landfill Directive target. And that target is a very serious target. Basically, it's about reducing the amount of waste going to landfill. And if the UK doesn't hit that target, and we generally don't, we get fined very heavily. And I suppose ultimately that has implications on the tax that we pay. So that's why a lot of the initiatives around increasing recycling, getting us to recycle more, reducing packaging, that's an area that RAP work in order to help the government achieve meeting the EU Landfill Directive target. So I'd say that's one of our major targets. Mm-hmm. There's also the new government bill on CO2 reduction, reducing CO2 levels by 80% by 2050. And that is a huge target.
When governments do targets like 30, 40, 50 years in the future, everybody knows they're not going to hit it.
Not necessarily. It is achievable. There are achievable targets.
Yeah, but they're so far in the future so that no one can be blamed
Certainly.
For not hitting them.
But what one does, and this is where organizations like RAP are very important, or we feel we have a central role, is that we are there on the ground to assist in achieving those targets. So our business plan is quite often on a 3-year cycle, and within that 3-year cycle, we have to hit certain targets that fulfill ultimately definitely the government's targets.
Okay. I'm very dubious about politicians making grandiose schemes for 50 years and in the future.
Fair enough. And it's a very serious target. So the question is out there, but we'll do our damnedest.
Okay. You mentioned the landfill target.
Yeah.
What is that target about? You know, what does it actually say?
Ultimately, the landfill directive target is about sending less to landfill.
Mm-hmm. What's the problem with sending stuff to landfill?
Well, the main problem sending things to landfill is space. I suppose that's what most people are familiar with, mm-hmm. particularly in a country which is an island like the UK. We don't have a lot of space. So I think that's the one thing that most people are familiar with. When it gets a little bit more scientific, when landfill waste starts to degrade, it can release a variety of chemicals and gases, in particular methane.
Yep.
And so people are very familiar, particularly New Zealanders, and cows and methane and lambs and methane. And if we can reduce product going to landfill, we're reducing a lot of those. But that's at the end. I think what's really important to remember, and a lot of people don't think about this, is if we're actually reducing what's going to landfill, we're reducing ultimately what we're taking out of the earth. So things that actually make glass, things that actually make plastic, we're actually going to be reducing that impact as well.
Okay. What is the target for glass in the UK?
I'm not particularly aware of any targets for the glass industry as per se, but I am very aware of RAP-specific targets on glass reduction. So we estimate, carrying out analyses on waste that arises in the household waste stream, from the hospitality sector, etc., that we can at least reduce what's going out there by 10% at minimum. Mm-hmm. In terms of wine bottles per se, we've ourselves set a target of 30,000 tons of glass weight reduction by the end of this year.
30,000? How many bottles is that?
That's lots of millions and millions of bottles.
What does a bottle weigh
about? An average wine bottle weighs, and this is where I'm sad, 488 grams. So that's a lot of tons. But you know, when you start working with the bigger brands, which is what a lot of our work is about, and retailers, those targets can be achievable. And when you think of, and I'm just referring here to the wine industry, when you consider that wine bottles weigh anywhere from 300 grams to a kg, the question is, why a kg? And the likes of Janssens Robinson, etc., you know, they and yourselves, you know, are quick to question weights of bottles. And, you know, moving to 300 grams, which is not appropriate for everybody, you're talking of even more than 10%. So the targets we've set are actually quite realistic in the greater scheme of things.
Let's talk a wee bit about what you're actually doing to minimize the targets, etc. To me, there seems to be a couple of things. Probably bulk importing mm-hmm. of wine seems to be the big one. A lot mm-hmm. of people hear about when they're talking about RAP, etc.
Yes.
Do you want to just give us an overview of what is bulk importing and what are you trying to achieve?
Sure. For our project, which has got the name Glass Right Wine and has got some sort of funky Americanized title, right with an R, is that we're very much focusing on two elements. So there's the packaging element and reducing the weight of that. And then the other is to increase the recycled content of wine bottles manufactured in the UK. And it will not be a surprise to most in the wine industry that the UK produces very little wine. We actually import over 98% of our wine. Mm-hmm. That's 1.6 billion litres. We are the world's biggest importer of wine. We're not the biggest drinkers. That's left up to the French. It's significant. We do recognize that we are obviously not the only destination of wine, but the UK is a big market for a lot of the wine world, in particular the New World.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of potential to expand the market in the UK. One thing that's very interesting is, why are we focusing on bulk importation and recycled content in the UK? The UK's glass manufacturing sector is a very interesting one. It's one that's very much dominated by producing clear glass. The industry call it flint. And that goes into producing bottles for our spirit sector, of which a lot is actually exported over to the Far East. And I'm sure some of the wine industry consume that in their countries of origin. We also produce a lot of clear containers for the food industry.
Jam jars,
honey jars, pickles, you name it. So that makes up a significant proportion. The other area is we do produce a lot of amber and green. It's known as emerald green. It's quite a brilliant green. You might have seen it on the shelves. And that's very historical because that's to feed a rather large beer industry in the UK. So the likes of Stella Artois, you name it. And the wine industry, so is very new to that. And they've just been, the glass industry have therefore just been adopting, well, can we produce wine bottles in clear or emerald green?
Is the emerald green glass different to the glass that we normally, green glass that we use in wine bottles?
It is. It's a different colour. When we say different, it's still green, so it can take a high recycled content. But the common colours that are produced by glass manufacturers in Australia, New Zealand, South Africa and the continent is what's called autumn leaf or dead leaf. And some of you might be familiar with it. It's sort of a greeny, yellow, ambery colour. And what's quite interesting is when we've carried out trials to try and get that colour, actually, if you put recycled glass, all the mixed colours together, it comes out that sort of colour. So for a company like Rapp, that's of real interest to us. So we're starting to explore those options. But what's really good about green, and it doesn't matter almost whether it's emerald or autumn leaf, is it can take a very high recycled content. So it can take anywhere up to 100%, but on average about 80% recycled content.
Okay, whereas normal flint glass, obviously impurities get in it and discolour.
Yeah, it might not necessarily be impurities, but it's more the demand from the brand owners, particularly those in the spirits industry, who want what's called medicinal flint, sparkly, almost magnifying glass colour flint. And the chances are that's probably got minimal, if any, recycled content. However, what's really interesting is if you look at a lot of Italian wine bottles that are clear, they've got a slight green tint to them. Coca-Cola is another good example, and Bacardi.
Yep.
They've all got a slight green tint to them. And so we know consumers are actually, particularly in the alcoholics sector, consumers are actually quite happy to consume wine and spirits from bottles that have got a slight green tint. And some brands see that as an advantage. So that's another area for Rapp.
The advantage of having slight green tint? Is it more recycled content?
It does. It's an indicator that there might be a little bit more recycled content in that bottle. So Rapp, if I can jump ahead a little bit, is we're really keen on, if you are in the wine industry and you would like to bottle in clear or flint, is to really think about increasing the recycled content in your clear bottles, because it can be very effective.
How much can you get up to in clear glass?
About 40%. But it really varies on the quality of the recycled glass, and in the industry that's called cullet, coming into the glass furnace.
Sorry, I don't understand that.
So basically, a glass manufacturer gets sand and it gets silica and a whole number of other things to make a bottle. Recycled glass, which you put out in the curbside, is called cullet to the industry.
Cullet,
C-U-L-L-E-T. And that is just added to the big melting pot.
Yep.
And it has a number of benefits, which we can talk about later. But you can add that to increase your recycled content for different colours,
Okay. Rosé wines have a short shelf life and they are quite often bottled under clear glass.
Yes.
Am I right in saying that clear glass, from your point of view, is better than green glass because it has more uses, or?
No, not necessarily. What's quite interesting with colour is obviously UV protection of the wine, and that's something Rapp have looked into as well, not just from a colour perspective, but if you start to thin bottles, will you be letting in more light? But in terms of, to go back to your question about what we think is best, That's really not for us to say. Ultimately, that's for the brand to decide, because it will, there'll be so many variables that they will take into account. What we can say is that green glass can have a higher recycled content. So if that's really important for your brand from an environmental perspective, then that's something to pursue.
Let's jump in a bit more about bulk importing.
Yes.
We were talking offline a wee bit about your focus in terms of the price point for the wines that you're focused in on. And you're saying that about £5 and under is where emphasis.
Yes.
And that sort of fits quite nicely with bulk importing.
Definitely.
Because that's the price point that bulk importing wine would normally come in at.
Yes.
What sort of things have you done to improve bulk importing? And has bulk importing grown in the last couple of years?
Yes. Bulk importing has increased. If I can just reiterate, what is bulk importing? Because when I first came to this project, I just thought bulk importing was just meant mass movement. In the wine industry, it means bringing it in flexi tank instead of bringing it over in bottles.
Yep.
And historically, bulk importation has had a bit of a bad rap. Some things have gone wrong, but I think as a result of that, a lot of particularly the bulk importers, the Hillebrands and so on and so forth, the Habbocknagels and so on, have really spent a lot of time on improving the technology of transporting wine to far-flung places. So we've moved from steel tanks, which is what originally the wine used to come in, to what now is termed flexi tanks, which is basically a big balloon in a tank, to be crude. And I know a lot of emphasis has gone into improving that technology. And if one is to believe the information that is out there, that has certainly gone a long way to improving the technology for improving, well, maintaining quality over traveling distances.
What sort of countries import bulk? Who are the big bulk importers? What are the commercial advantages?
Yeah, there's certainly some big commercial advantages for countries from the New World, and they tend to also be the major bulk importers.
Australia.
So Australia is a very good example. Argentina, funnily enough, they're not only are they new emergence in the wine industry, but they also have really leapt on the bulk importation bandwagon. So Fullpack is an example of a company heavily involved in South America bulk importing wine. In terms of...
What about countries like Italy or France?
Yes, they do bulk import, but what's quite interesting is they tend to be a hub for wine bulk imported into the country. So you've got examples of wines that are coming in from America for some of the big brands such as Gallo, etc., that are actually bulk imported from the States to Italy and get bottled in Italy, and then the... wine is distributed across the continent and into the new emerging markets such as China and India. So it's quite interesting that the UK might not necessarily be the hub for bulk imported wine, but some of the other countries in the continent are.
Okay. We did an interview with Kingsland Wine and Spirits a long time ago.
Yes.
And they're a big bottling firm based up near Manchester,
yes,
Leedsways. And they were doing things like, I think it was a bit of PR, to be honest. But they were doing things like using barges to bring the wine in a bit further in, so that rather than sort of double handling it and trucking it, etc. Transporting wine from Italy or wherever to Europe costs a lot of money in CO2 in terms of trucking and travel costs.
Yes.
CO2 is quite expensive driving things around.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be far more environmentally friendly to bottle in the UK rather than bottling in Italy and driving through, because use more CO2 going from Italy to the UK than it is from Australia to the UK.
That's a very good question you ask, and I think becomes even more significant if you look at the cost and the CO2 benefits when you look at a country like Australia, where bulk importation can actually reduce CO2 by anywhere from 35 to 45%. That is huge. And that's because you can get a lot more wine into a flexi tank than bottles into a standard 25,000 foot container.
I heard it was something like half the weight and half the volume was wasted in a case of wine.
Yeah, so something along those lines. Not only that, what's quite interesting is RAP have done a piece of work looking at the real nitty-gritty of these reductions. So if anyone's interested, please visit our website. Because you can go into the nitty-gritty and find out what are the calculations behind this. But not only can you equate the CO2 savings to other savings, but one of the biggest ones might be economic savings to the supply chain. So you're actually sending less over. You're doing less trips, and I would think that has significant cost reductions. The interesting thing is those cost savings are up to the brands, the retailers, the transport companies to negotiate amongst themselves. That's not for the likes of RAP to become involved in.
What other pros and cons are there for bulk importing?
I suppose one of the biggest pros, or there are a whole number of pros actually, some of them, and this is what we hear from the retailers such as Tesco, Sainsbury's and Asda, is that when it comes to campaigns such as promotions, etc., etc., they have a lot more lead time. So wine is coming in and they can actually make changes to labels and things like that on site in the UK instead of having to make that decision 2 months ago in the country of origin. Yep. So there are those sorts of benefits. Apparently there's a lot more flexibility when bottling in the country of sale.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm. I think we'll wrap it up there. And Nicola, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.